that breakneck tempo. And when in the show on the other night, Christopher Hitchens was in the audience.
Mm-hmm.
And Christopher Hitchens wanted to come up and be part of it, sign the envelope. And the usher tried to stop Christopher Hitchens. But you don't stop Christopher Hitchens. And he went up on stage to sign the envelope and took his sweet time doing it. And Jonesy's already played, 10 choruses of Caravan at this unbelievable tempo. And there's Christopher Hitchens kind of taking his time on stage while Jonesy's arms almost fall off. It was a great, great piece of theater at the Penn & Teller Theater at the Rio. 866-570-PEN, 7366, PennRadio@gmail.com, PennRadio.com. We've been doing a lot of goofy shows lately.
We have.
And today there's actually a topic that it's one of those topics that I want people to call in on because
Tom, serious?
Yeah, a little bit. Because I want people to call in on this because I really don't know how exactly I feel about this. Ted Kaczynski, I guess Theodore Kaczynski. I shouldn't be that pleasant to him. Yeah, Teddy.
Ted and I.
Teddy the K, the Unabomber. Unabomber has how many pages? 40,000 pages of writing.
Handwritten notes.
Yeah, and they're really handwritten, too. And some of it's coded. You know, there's a whole list on the front page of the New York Times. Right next to the picture of the African-American man with the helmet flying. There's a great picture of during a football contest. There's a guy who's up higher than I thought was possible. Godot tells me that African-Americans can jump 4 feet straight up. So.
Damn.
That's a piece of information Godot was giving me. I didn't know that. It's something about the knees or something. Isn't we get in a lot of trouble for saying that?
I don't know.
I think so. But anyway, I guess I underestimate the quality of sports people because this guy is safe to say I think that he's in better shape than I am.
Yeah, possibly. It's also kind of flying day because we also have that picture of that matador.
There's a picture of the matador
who is clearly flying.
He's flying
prone,
over the pool. Yeah.
Arms out.
Yeah, there's people
like stylishly diving over the pool.
Monday, January 22nd, 2007 is when people began flying. It'll be a very important day. They're trying to get news out of it. And this is the saddest day. Mm-hmm. Did you read about that kind of stuff? Like this is the Blue Monday because this is the day that taxes are paid and people's New Year's resolutions have fallen through and the Christmas bills are coming and it's the winter. So this is the bummer day of the year and people learn to fly on that day. So the Unabomber has 40,000
pages. They needed it most. It was the day they needed it most.
They needed it most. People began flying. Number 80. People probably know who number 80 is. Bernard Berrien. Am I saying his name right? Soars in Chicago's 39-14 beat there. He's flying. It's worth buying the paper just to see the guy flying. It's cool. They're talking about it's 9 years after Teddy K, Theodore Kaczynski, started serving his life sentence. And he is trying to get his 40,000 pages of writing and correspondence so he can preserve them in their rawest form for the public to read. Theodore would like the public to see all his rantings. Did you ever see that contest where you had to try to pick, it was on the web, try to pick what thing was written by Al Gore in his book, in the book, and what was written by Teddy Kaczynski? It was very hard to tell the difference. He's a legal battle with federal government and a group of victims over the future of the handwritten papers, which include journals, diaries, and drafts of his anti-technology manifesto, which is Al Gore's. The journals contain blunt assessments of 16 mail bombings from 1978 to 1995 that killed 3 people and injured 28, as well as his musing on the suffering of victims and their families. The government wants to auction sanitized versions of the material on the Internet to raise money for 4 of Mr. Kaczynski's victims. Mr. Kaczynski citing the First Amendment that the government is not entitled to his writings and has no right to alter them.
Now he's worried about law? All of a sudden, law has become important?
866-570-PEN, 7366. 866-570-PEN. PennRadio@gmail.com, PennRadio.com. Now, I believe, have you ever read any of Teddy Kaczynski's writings?
I have not.
Yeah, I have because I'm a nut, and that's one of the things nuts do. I read the whole Mies Commission on Pornography, and I read, you know, the Teddy Kaczynski.
40,000 pages.
I did not read the 40,000 pages. As a matter of fact, I probably read 4 pages altogether, and it was all typed out and nice in a newspaper or something. I didn't read it in its raw form. But it's horrible stuff. It's Luddite stuff. It's anti-technology stuff. And he was targeting scientists. And you probably don't know this, and I can't talk about it more on the radio, but there were friends of ours that were on the list to be targeted.
Really?
Yeah, by letter bombs, by Teddy, when they found out later. And the FBI knew that they were targeted, people that we know and love. And so it was pretty close to home. And he was also what was really, any human life is a human life. But what made it more personal to me is that Teddy Kaczynski was targeting
friends.
The smartest and most technologically advanced people. He was really going after scientists. And there have been very few terrorist attacks that target scientists. You know, it's usually business people and, you know, or innocent people.
Somewhere where you can scare the most people.
Yeah. This was the bothersome thing. And the question is now, the 40,000 pages of his writings, you know, should they be given to him? He wrote them to have them published the way he wants. He can't make money from them. There's that law already in place. He can't make money from them. But he wants to put them out in their raw form, the way he wants them to be read. And they want to alter them, sanitize them, clean them up, and sell them on the internet, the raw stuff, and give the money to the victims. And victims
use the scripts as part of the Mickey Mouse Club.
Yeah. And the victims can't even agree on what they want here. The 4 victims pursuing restitution for Mr. Kaczynski were initially reluctant to agree to the auction, fearing that it could ghoulishly generate more notoriety for him and further publicize their pain. But some were equally horrified by the prospect of Mr. Kaczynski reclaiming his writings. So these 40,000 pages, do they go to Mr. Kaczynski, Theodore Kaczynski, to publish any way he wants without making the money? Or do they go to the government to be sanitized and then put out so the victims' families and the victims get more money? In this case, not the couple dozen victims, but only 4 of them that are petitioning for this. 866-570-PEN. 7366 is the phone number. It's 7366 if you don't have letters on your phone. 866-570-PEN. The email is penradio@gmail.com. That's pen, P-E-N-N, radio@gmail.com, penradio.com.
I think it's really interesting that his brother turned him in, but because he recognized the style of his writing.
Yeah.
So apparently Ted's a pretty stylistic writer, or, I mean...
Well, you haven't read his stuff.
Yeah, I read a little of it.
You can recognize the style. It's, you know, it's that cramped style in a cabin, insane rantings. And it's surprising...
Anti-technology, and he's using paper and pencils that were probably made by machines.
Sure. But
he wasn't using papyrus, was he?
He didn't just carve it into the floor of his... Well, he's also using bombs, you know. So he's fighting technology with technology. It was pretty interesting how much damage he was able to do from a cabin one place. What do you think? So the stuff come out or not? It's a real tough freedom of speech issue. It's a real tough freedom of speech issue. And I think that having the writings and the ravings of nuts, I think Mein Kampf being out is a terrific thing. I think, what is it, the Turner Diaries?
Yeah.
That was the thing that got...
It's illegal to own Mein Kampf in Germany.
Yeah. Yeah, well, Germany is perhaps less free than the USA, and maybe should stay that way. But I think that the racist, crazy, horrible stuff should be available. But the question is, I think that when all is said and done, I come down on the side of Theodore Kaczynski, as long as he doesn't make money on it. Let's take a call. Let's talk to Garrett. What's up, Garrett? This is Penn.
Hi, Penn. I'm actually a librarian at a university in Illinois, mm-hmm. and at the University of Illinois. But yeah. we have archived material from World War II, and we actually have a really large archive of stuff from the Germans. They're incredibly accurate and detailed accounting of the Holocaust.
The so-called Holocaust.
I'm sorry.
The supposed Holocaust.
Yes, exactly.
Yes, I know. There's a lot of records of that. It still amazes me that Holocaust deniers can exist. But go on. You know, I interrupted you.
If one thing, Germans were meticulous. We also have like the propaganda material, and actually there's an exhibit ongoing right now about these maps they were drawing of like what the new Europe would look like, and it's you know the same crazy nonsense sort of thing in a totally different vein, but you know it's material that's of great interest to historians, and you know Ted Kaczynski is something that is of interest to historians and of interest to people who are studying that movement and as well what he did, and I think it should be accessible. I think in a proper setting like that, it's you know can be preserved and studied. But in terms of selling it to make money like that, I mean, yeah, I can't argue the families and all that, but it rubs me completely the wrong way as someone who works in information, you know, making information as available to the public as possible.
It's funny that this one, the lurid side, is kind of the side of the victims. And I don't want to blame the victims for this because they're saying this themselves, that it comes out.
Right.
But the idea of it being sanitized also troubles me, because a lot of times when you take when they took excerpts from the stuff that he wrote, it actually makes it more sensible to take out the stuff that's most offensive.
Have you seen he wrote that, I think it was called like the Lost Ship or the Ship of Fools, and it was this lengthy, like, how, you know, it was a sort of parable of humanity as this lost ship wandering the earth. And it was, if you read the whole thing, you're like, wow, he's completely out of his flippin' mind.
Uh-huh.
I mean, but if you had read excerpts of it or whatever, yeah, it gives him more credit. It's like the context of here's his big ball of crazy. It helps you to go, okay, well, he's nuts. You know, here's his 400 pages of how, you know, loggers should be, you know, shot, and how, you know, petrochemical companies are plotting to, you know, destroy the greenhouse gas with their undermining, you know, their underwater mining facilities. It's like, great, okay, now we understand. But if you give him, you know, oh, well, this is his sensible, you know, little manifesto,
So did you read the whole thing?
I read the one that they published when he was still unknown.
You are a good librarian.
Thank you. I'll put that on my resume.
When you have the real nuts stuff, the Hitler stuff, the Nazi stuff that's there at the library, and people come in to check it out, does it ever creep you out? Do you ever think it's the, I don't know how to put this, that it's the wrong people that are looking at this?
Because in our collection we have Samuel Beckett slippers. He did a play in Chicago, and he came and he was showing how to walk like a little old man, and he was shuffling around stage. So we have like interesting stuff like that that someone will want to come see, and then we have this image archive of someone who actually was one of the first liberators of, I think it was Bergen-Belsen, and when someone comes in and want to look at that, and sometimes they're very serious historians and they want to make copies and they're using it for image purposes. But there are times where you're sitting there and you look and go, like, why do you want to see this? It's in the back of your head, but you never – that's what makes you a librarian, is you kind of have a moment of, okay, good. I'm glad you want to – I'm glad, you know, this is an academic purpose. I see your point, but you're creepy. That's a good one to have coffee with you.
That's a fine thing. Now, let me ask you this, because I had a discussion with my wife about this. Did you watch the Saddam Hussein hanging, the cell phone video?
I've seen it,
I did not watch it. I didn't want to see it. And I was surprised by how many people that said they weren't interested in seeing it saw it. Did you see it?
I did not see it. I have not. I have no interest, no.
I have no interest in seeing that whatsoever. That's an image that I don't want in my head. So yeah. I would be the one coming to the library saying, do you have any books on kittens?
Yes, we do.
but the idea. So I guess I'm trying to sum up what you're saying. You would say that in going, which there's a library, and I forget where it was in the article. I've lost it here. I don't want to spend time looking for it. But there is a library that has a huge collection of anarchist writings. Yeah. I forget where it was. Was it Michigan or something? And the library has said it will take his writings just as they are and preserve them. So are you saying that that's what you would go with? Is that right?
I would definitely. And I mean, not only for the aspect of it's for historical purposes. It's for understanding this. It's for, you know, later generations to figure this guy out and sort of puzzle over why he did this. But it also, to be really honest, libraries buy those resources. And they'll probably spend several thousand dollars on it, and that could go to the victims, too.
Uh-huh. Yes.
I mean, there's still a way for them to see some recuperation on it, you want them to.
I know what you mean about the idea of it being in private collectors' hands creepy. I'm all for private people owning stuff, but, you know, John Wayne Gacy does these clown drawings. Some friends of mine like buy them, you know, and I guess the money does go into some pool or for some victims or something.
Sure.
But, you know, they asked me, you know, we should get you a John Wayne Gacy drawing. Wouldn't that be a hip thing to have? And I had no interest in it at all. You know, I'm very proud of having Dean Martin's golf club. You know, I'm very proud of owning a pair of Tiny Tim's pants, but I do not, and I'm proud of some of my Dylan collection, but I do not want to own things by people who are that bad, because even there is some sort of, even if you're laughing at it and saying, look how out we are and how crazy we are, there seems to be some sort of, you're not condoning what they did, but some sort of ever so slight, I can't think of the right word, but celebration. And that's what troubles me. And yet, I look at this whole thing, I look at the victims, I think they've thought about this so much more than me. They have gotten together, they've made some sort of decision. You don't want to reject that out of hand. So it's a really tough issue, and it's good that a librarian called. You got somebody else say, quit?
If I can make one appeal to you, when you die, which hopefully will be in several centuries, thanks to technology. But
thanks.
I've already asked for the Tiny Tim pants. Just give it up, man.
I'm just saying that sort of material and that sort of stuff. It really, you know, it's great that it's from a collector's hands. At some point or another, whether your children or your great grandchildren decide, you find somewhere to put that, just for its own sake of. It really, when people come in and are able to touch that history and see that great stuff and that creepy stuff, there is something about that. I mean, people's eyes light up. And that's again, why this stuff being in somewhere where people can actually, you know, access it publicly and access it in a comfortable, like, you know, I mean, controlled setting like that where it's preserved and cared for, it's really great because it allows that stuff to live on. And even if it's living on in a negative way of like, well, look how crazy this guy was. Yeah. You know, I'm like, let's never do that again.
Well, let me just say, Garrett, if I were your high school guidance counselor, I would listen to all this and say, you know, you should be a librarian. I'm so glad it's someone like you watching over this stuff. We got to take a break, but thank you so much, Garrett, for calling.
Thank you. Bye.
This is Penn Jillette. We're on 866-570-PEN, 7366. We're talking about that hard question of Theodore Kaczynski, the Unabomber. His papers are 40,000 pages. Should they go to a library, which is what Theodore Kaczynski wants, or should they be sanitized and put into private hands, sold for the victim's retribution? 866-570-PEN, 7366. PennRadio@gmail.com is our Gmail address. Remember that Penn is with two N's. PennRadio.com. Call us, write us, whatever. We'll be back after this. This is Penn Jillette, CBS Radio, Free FM.
About actually just taking a crayon and coloring over some words and then selling the actual papers. That's not the impression that I'm getting. I'm sorry that we haven't talked about that until this exact moment, but I don't think they're talking about changing the actual papers and then selling them.
the government wants to auction sanitized versions of the materials on the internet to raise money. I think that means the actual things.
How do you sanitize them without totally making them worthless?
I don't know. I don't know how they're going to do that. I think they maybe would pick
sanitized
out...
Sanitized version, I mean, yeah.
They'd pick out whole pages, I think. I don't think they're talking about that.
Selling individual pages on
I think
eBay?
So.
Is that?
That's what they said. The internet. What else
yeah,
is the internet?
Okay, I guess
eBay?
That's true.
Let's talk to Paul. What's up, Paul?
Hey, how you doing, Ben?
Doing very well, thanks. What's up?
Yeah, it's about, 2:30 right now?
Yeah, sure.
One more half an hour to the Donna Mike show.
I think you're going to make it.
That was
his whole show. Yeah, well, I guess he doesn't think Kaczynski should.
I love Don and Mike.
Yeah.
I love Don and Mike.
What's not to like about Don and Mike?
Yeah, they're fine.
And they're not going to talk about Kaczynski's papers.
They're not. Well, that's fine. If you, it's actually if you're waiting for the Don and Mike show, it's a little less than that. But he'll be they'll be on soon in some markets, but not in all the markets that we're on. Let's talk to Amora. Hey, Amora, what's up?
Hey, not much. What's going on with you?
We're just doing the show. What's up with the Unabomber? Any ideas?
Oh, God. Funny. Well, my whole perspective is the fact of the matter is that the man was a criminal. He mm-hmm. killed people. Mm-hmm. I mean, why should we humor him and let him publish or even sell his work? When you're in prison, you don't get privileges like that. You know, you're supposed to be getting punished. Why should he be any different than murderers or child molesters, you know?
Well, murders and child molesters have written things that do get published in prison. And this is stuff that was written before he was in prison, and it's not that it's not the reward of being published, but it's the idea that maybe the information is important to future generations, and maybe people want to study how he went so crazy so as to stop someone else from going that crazy. I think that's the point. I don't think it's really a reward. I don't think he's going to become, he's there forever. He's not going to become a superstar because of publishing. And I would guess that publishing this stuff would make him less attractive. Did you hear Garrett who called in and said that, you know, out of context, the stuff actually sounds better than in context?
I haven't read the story. Yeah. I haven't read the words, but it's like the Saddam Hussein video. I don't want to.
All right, right. But the Saddam Hussein video, I want to make very clear, I did not want to see it. I have not seen it. I probably won't see it. I'm going to avoid seeing it.
I
do not think that other people should not see it. And that's the whole question about freedom of press and freedom of speech. It doesn't mean that you have to take in all this stuff. It just means that it could be available for others that want to. And that's the weirdest part about freedom of speech, is that you also have the choice to not listen and not read and not pay attention. There are shows on TV that I think suck. I don't watch them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, we have an email actually about that. We're going to read it right on top.
Thanks a lot, Amor. You want to read it on top?
Yeah, she's
perfectly
sure. We'll keep on. This is from Paul. He says, the only crappy thing about freedom is that every now and then you have to defend the freedoms of people that you completely disagree with.
Yeah, that's...
And so should we represent, you know, should we allow Ted to still have that particular freedom? I mean, we've taken all of his others.
Uh-huh.
Should we still let him have that other one? That's the weird part.
Yeah, but the I don't even know whose freedom it is. I don't think it's the Unabomber's freedom to publish we're talking about. We're talking about Garrett the librarian's freedom to have access to that stuff. And there's where the question really lies to me. You see the difference, Amar?
I do.
Yes, I do.
Yeah.
But I still don't think he should be able to, because it's like, do you understand what I'm trying to say, though? You know, it's like he killed people, you
yeah.
know? It's like people think that Ed Gein's work was art, and I'm an artist, and I hear this crap all the time.
Sure.
And it makes me sick. It's not art. It's disgusting, and it's just...
Absolutely, but don't you think that you don't want the Ed Gein stuff, and I don't want the Ed Gein stuff, but if someone else wants it, don't you think that's okay?
Well, I don't think it's okay to sell it, but then again, you know, this is America. You
but
know?
The money
People
does
can do whatever they
the
want.
Money does go to the victims, I believe.
Why would they? I mean, but see, it's like it's money off of a
yeah,
it's money off of things that the people that he hurt were made out of. You know what I mean?
It's very, very unpleasant, and I always think that information flowing is a better idea. But your position is absolutely where my heart is. My mind is just in another place on that. You know what I mean? I'm just, that's what I'm really torn about on this. But thanks an awful lot, Mark. I'm going to get to a few other points. We've got some emails I want to get to.
Yeah,
thanks, Mark.
The real point is that we're not trying to protect the rights of Kaczynski. We're protecting the right of the information.
Yeah, I think so. I think here's a few, I want to get to a few Gmails here. The phone number, incidentally, if you want to call in, 866-570-PEN. That's 7366. 866-570-PEN. PenRadio@gmail.com. PenRadio.com. Let's see what we got here. Todd writes in and says, one of the things that was said when Saddam Hussein was hung, I think he means hanged. I don't really know the information on whether he was hung or not. But when Saddam Hussein was hanged, Dawkins stated it was a huge loss because he should have been poked and prodded to see how he thinks and how he was so evil. These documents should also be kept for the same reason. It is a way for generations of people to look at and study the insanity of such a monster. And it should be made very public and should be looked at in a very, very educational way. And then he quotes a blog from Reason, which, of course, we always love. And I also, you know, I think I disagree once again with Richard Dawkins on the idea that Saddam Hussein should have been poked and prodded in a way that would be torture at all. But I certainly agree he should be kept alive so we can learn all we can. I really think that that having who's the Oklahoma City bomber?
Oh, yeah,
yeah,
sure.
That he should have been kept alive, because maybe he would have...
It seems like he might have had more information that he would have found useful. I don't know that that's the case with Saddam Hussein.
Yeah, Timothy McVeigh is his name. Yeah. Here's another great note. And this is from someone who... I always like when we have someone who seems like they might know something that they're talking about. Here's a guy with a PhD and a military background, guy named Kevin. I don't want to give out too much information, because... that's his privacy. The Japanese did both cold studies and chemical biological warfare testing on prisoners over many, many years. They froze prisoners to death to see what kind of effects cold had on performance and how death occurred over time. They dropped anthrax and other bioagents on prisoners and then did autopsies to determine how death resulted. Gruesome stuff for sure. Once the war was over, the guy leading the work on cold went on to own and operate a company that manufactured cold weather clothing and refrigerators. He is very, very rich today and well respected in Japan. On the bioagent side, the U.S. government granted immunity for the officer in charge to get the data for their work. This was especially important to be signed on to not develop offensive weapons, and we could never get this data, ever. Gruesome stuff, but once it is done, there can be some good from it, provided the folks looking at the data have a moral compass. Great topic, Penn and Mike, and that's from Kevin. That stuff that's really hard. You know, once you solve what should be done with the Unabomber's papers, then you have to go to that other stuff.
Right.
You know, that's he's going into really advanced stuff. And I think I'm just going to, I don't think I'm even... qualified to comment on that. He knows more than I know. So
here's an interesting idea. Here, someone says anyone who wants to buy Kaczynski's Ramblings should have to buy all of them, put out a single 40,000 page volume, so it's the size of the OED, and that's it. You have to buy the whole thing. You can't buy segments.
Well, that's what a library would do, I imagine.
Yeah.
866-570-PEN. That's 7366. You want to call in and chat about this. PenRadio@gmail.com. PenRadio.com. Michael Goudeau is sitting on the other mic. This is Penn Jillette on Free FM, CBS Radio. Yeah, this is Penn Jillette on the Free FM, CBS Radio. 866-570-PEN. 7366. PenRadio@gmail.com, PenRadio.com. We're talking today about Theodore Kaczynski and his papers. He has 40,000 pages, and he would like to have control of them and have them released just the way they are, probably to a library. And four of the couple dozen victims, or more than that, I guess, it's almost three dozen victims, have gotten together and say that that should be sanitized, whatever that means, and then sold them to collectors. And this brings up a lot of freedom of speech issues and libertarian issues and information issues, and it brings up all sorts of stuff for me. So I want to talk about it a little bit, and we are 866-570-PEN. Let's just,
I think the first thing we should do is decide that his opinion of what we should do with his papers is not at all valid. Let's just make that statement right off the top. Shut up, Ted. We don't care what your point on this is.
Well, that is an issue, though, Godot.
That's where we should start.
We do care. People who are in prison still have rights. They don't have, all their rights are not gone. He does have some rights. He does get to talk. He does get to talk to the press. He does get to make his point.
Right.
And we want that power to be there.
Yes.
Because
saying,
if someone is...
Let's not talk about his side of it. Let's just go, okay, great, Ted. Thank you. That's great. You want something?
Well, he certainly has a right to say that, though. Let's talk about... Let's talk to Jeff. How you doing, Jeff?
Hey, guys. How are you?
Doing very well, thanks. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing well, thank you. I'm a big fan of your show, both
Excellent.
Here and on television.
Oh,
wanted to say that. Been listening to you for a while.
Thanks a lot, man.
Hey, look, the point I wanted to bring up, and it was kind of interesting what you guys were just saying, that, you know, his point of view doesn't necessarily come into it. If you take a look at Galileo, mm-hmm. he was imprisoned for his theory that the Earth rotated around the sun.
Yes, he was.
As a reverse to what everyone was saying at the time. Now, I'm certainly not taking... you know, the Unabomber's side on this, but I think the whole purpose behind freedom of speech is that you have to get as much information as you can from as many different points and able to make a correct decision. I don't think that this stuff should be sanitized. I don't think it should be sold off to collectors. It's public domain. This stuff should be available to everyone, because even the dumbest person that you meet or the craziest person that you meet, you can still learn something from.
Yeah, I think you really won me over to that side. I think you're absolutely right, and I think the Galileo, we have had people, I mean, Mandela, Galileo, zillions of others, people who have been in prison who time has shown to be right. I think the chances of that happening with Theodore Kaczynski are zero.
Well,
that doesn't mean that the mechanism for that being able to be fixed in the future should be taken away. So I'm with you 100%.
Yeah, I agree with you. All I'm saying is, and I haven't read this, so I can't, you know, like I said, I'm not on the guy's side in particular, but, you know, his opinions on technology or this or that, there are a lot of arguments there. There has to be something that can be drawn from that, and that should be available to American, well, to the world, really, to read.
Sure. Thank you so much. I think I'm coming around on this. I think it should go out there. Thanks a lot, Jeff. He's starting to talk.
Yeah, but then I...
Yeah. But the secret of life is... Okay.
Yeah, you'll probably go.
Do you say something, Godot?
No, go ahead.
Okay.
If you sanitize Ted Kaczynski's writings, there are going to be conspiracy theorists later who are going to say, see this word that he crossed out? This was the word that made it all make sense.
Yeah, yeah.
This word right here put the whole thing together. Solved the puzzle.
If you sanitize it, it also sounds less crazy.
Yeah.
That's what troubles me. Here's a note from Adam. I think the answer to the question is an easy one, freedom. Let's assume for a moment that we live in bizarro world, where what Ted is saying is actually correct, and the society we live in is truly flawed. If that is true, then we desperately need his ideas. We should never censor or restrict ideas just because they don't fit within our current matter of thinking. That's the exact... Oh, here we go. That's the exact same kind of attitude that kept the sun rotating around the earth. It is true that Ted killed people, but that doesn't by default render his ideas without merit. And therefore, if we want to view ourselves as truly free people, then his writing should be fully available to the public without any form of censorship. That's Adam that wrote that in. And I think that's the position I'm coming around to. I kind of started this show not really knowing where I was, but I think that talking out a little bit, I'm starting to kind of come around to this. Let's talk to John. What's up, John?
Hey, Penn. How you doing?
Never better, boss. How are you, sir?
I'm doing pretty good. I just wanted to say real quick, I studied history at Penn State. Mm-hmm. It's my degree.
Yeah.
I love history, but I've seen a lot of people that just never really were able to get into it.
Uh-huh.
And I've never seen anybody pay attention more in history classes, especially the low-level ones, like the general education ones,
uh-huh.
than when they're talking about the monsters of history.
Uh-huh.
You know, the Hitlers, the Stalins, and hopefully someday the Ted Kaczynskis. I think they need to publish this stuff and let some guy who's willing to sit down and read all 40,000 pages write a book about it so that someday kids will be able to study this. Because every time somebody pays attention to, you know, the Hitler lecture, they're not just learning about that, you know, that wacko. They're learning about the times that guy lived in.
Uh-huh.
And so 100 years from now, people are going to be reading about Ted Kaczynski, and they're going to be learning about, you know, the 90s.
Yeah, well, that's a good point. Yeah, that's a good point, and you're reinforcing what I've been thinking more and more. So thanks an awful lot, John. Thanks.
Thank you.
What else you got there, Goodell?
Why? The government is so bad at doing everything. Why? What makes them think that they're the ones who would be sane?
Yeah.
You know, if they go through and sanitize it, they're just going to mess that up. It's, you know.
The one thing that sticks in my craw, the one thing that bugs me, is that the families of the victims, and the victims are the ones on the other side.
Yeah.
So I don't like to, you can't pick your moral position based on the moral character of the people that you're agreeing and disagreeing with. But, boy, it's sometimes very tempting to do it that way.
Somebody should just set up a fund where we can all send a dollar to each of them anytime we want to read it. Put it in a museum where we pay for access to it,
yeah.
And that money gets forwarded to them.
Yeah. That's another good idea. That's another good idea. Put it on tour. But I think the idea that somebody should read the whole thing is an interesting one, that one person should read all 40,000 pages. Maybe make Ted read it. 866-570-PEN-7366.
40,000 pages.
866-570-PEN, that's 7366. PenRadio@gmail.com, PenRadio.com. Sean Penn should do the book on tape. Just have Sean Penn reading 40,000 pages. Let's talk to Ron. What's up, Ron?
Hey, Penn. Super cool to talk to you, man.
Thanks. Nice to talk to you, man.
Large fan forever.
Thank you.
Well, a lot of people earlier stole my thunder. I agree that. I think it's like dull at this point. You know, I think it should be published, you know. I mean, but actually I can tell you a little bit what you're saying. People read this. I'm actually an environmental scientist.
Uh-huh.
And in my state, I find myself really in a tough position because I'm a libertarian as well. So
sure.
I'm really, you know, right in the railroad there.
Oh, yeah, you're fighting yourself all the time.
Pretty much. But I read... around when he got busted, it was on the internet. A government site actually posted a large chunk of this.
Uh-huh.
Put this online, and you could read his terrorist manifesto.
Uh-huh.
And I read a good chunk of it. You know, being a naturalist and being an environmental scientist, I know that that was a lot of his thing. He's worried about technology destroying nature, mm-hmm. yada yada. And when I was reading it, what I found is. He has, like, these clauses, like, where he almost writes, like, these little amendments, and then he kind of keeps saying, okay, well, this is what happens, and then he goes into these solutions. And the problem was, I found his writings were, I mean, his early stuff, the problems he saw it 15, 20 years ago. Brilliant, brilliant. But his solutions were the, you know, where what happened is you could tell that he lost control.
Uh-huh.
He lost control of his mind.
What problems do you think he had correct and early that other people didn't?
From his earliest points, now they didn't date a lot of his calls, but I do know he started writing when he was still professing in the 80s.
Uh-huh.
He wrote quite a bit. And I read from the first writings on, so I'm assuming it's around probably 85, 86.
Uh-huh.
And he actually, right off the bat, right around then, he started to talk about a technology-driven society, a development-driven society, a lack-of-rights-driven society where you're going to lose all your rights. He sees the, you know, he saw the credit card future. He saw the barcodes on humans at some point, so everybody can be monitored. He saw all these, like, Philip K. Dick kind of, like, science, you know what I mean?
Yeah, but Philip K. Dick was before that.
Yeah, exactly.
So he's not really giving information early in any way. He's giving information that others were also postulating.
Right, right. And that's true. Very good. I'm not saying that was limited to that.
Uh-huh.
He did go a lot more onto that. He went very, very deep into his theories of what would happen. Your reversal, your tumble down effect, your trickle down effect. And
uh-huh.
It was, some of the stuff was brilliant stuff, but the problem is, you know this, you can't stop progression.
Right, you can't. Yeah. But also what's interesting is if you wrote, or if anybody wrote, you know, if the guy down the street wrote 40,000 pages, and it is that ranting and rambling, and then someone who is educated and sane like yourself goes through and cherry picks the parts that are right,
right.
You're going to end up with things that are right no matter what you've got. There's just so much information. It's like going through the numbers of pi out a 100 million places, you're going to find series and patterns that make sense, and eventually you will find everything coded in there. 40,000 pages, and then people cherry pick it, you're going to find stuff that makes sense. And I don't think that from what I've heard about it, you know, it's the same problem you get with Nostradamus. In once things have happened and gone further along, you can go back and find people predicting it really easily because you have the hindsight in that, you know?
Excellent. I actually agree. You just gave me actually a different aspect in which no one has actually challenged me to that before. And you're right. You're right. I never thought of it like that. You're very correct.
Well, thanks a lot, Ron. Thanks a lot.
You're very correct.
Thanks a lot for calling. Thanks.
Well, I just wanted to let you know. And by the way, I saw you on the Nostradamus show the other day.
Okay, there you go. Thanks so much. Thanks so much, Ron.
Nostradamus
predicted you would see me on that show. Yeah, if you go back and look at the fourth quatrain, I think he has a little thing about that in there that you'd be able to figure out easily. Thank you so much, Ron. Thanks a lot, man.
Hey, take care, gentlemen.
Okay, so long.
You spelled Gillette with a G, though. We're not sure it's you.
We're not sure it's me. He said the razor shall rise upon the land. And 866-570-PEN 7366. We're just about to wrap it up. You said someone wrote a letter that asked us a question, that if you could eliminate the Bible and the Quran and
all memory of it with a push of a button.
All memory of that with a push of a button, would you do it? You know, with all the suffering that those manifestos have caused, and all the horror and suffering, would you do that? And I think that kind of forces me to think hard and put my proverbial money where my mouth is. I think I say no. I think that even information that's done that much damage is information that should be around, because we just don't know what's important, what matters, and any sort of information out there. I think it all comes down to, and I think I've done probably 30 shows that all come down to the marketplace of ideas. But I really do believe very strongly in the marketplace of ideas. I believe that the cure for bad speech is more speech. And the more information is out there, the more we're all talking to each other, crazy people talking to scientists, and sanity and everything being fine. I think that you just have to keep talking. And that's what we're going to try to do. This is Penn Jillette, Michael Godeau. We're on Free FM, CBS Radio. And we'll be back tomorrow if someone doesn't push a button and eliminate us completely.